Hello, Kantians. Welcome back to the podcast. I am very excited for you to all meet today's guest. He has been a longtime friend of mine from Alaska, who also happened to move to Texas around the same time as I did. Probably the nicest and most talented guy I know, Mr. Tom Paquette.
Coors Banquet, brewed in the Rockies.
Okay, try three. Try third. Third try, whatever. Fuck it. Welcome to the podcast, Mr. Tom Paquette. And you're not fucking there.
Check one, two.
There you are.
You there? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay, cool.
Jeez, you know what it is that it's probably like a fuckload of people that are on the internet right now, and it's just messing up this recording.
Bandwidth issues.
Oh, dude, well, I'm in Laredo, so I'm basically in Mexico. So
it's almost like we're far away, but not at all.
Bro, I think we're, what, 3 hours away from each other?
Yeah, I'm looking at your recordings right now, and your spikes are a lot more than mine. I don't know if my audio volume's fine. Yeah. You let me know.
Yeah, you're perfectly fine. For some reason, anytime I'm recording on Zencaster, it does that. I have buddies in Tennessee. They're in a band, and they're in a music program at one of the universities there. Mm-hmm. And he's like, dude, your WAV file is so much bigger than mine. Like, your pickup's so much better. And then we'll listen to it afterwards, and they both sound perfectly clear.
Yeah, it's probably just because you're doing the primary bandwidth on the call.
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I host the storage and everything, so I think it just, whatever. So let's talk about Round Rock, because I think you and I moved to Texas very, very close to one another.
Without even knowing.
At very similar times. Yeah, exactly. Unplanned. So when did you move to Round Rock, and what was like the primary motivation?
So the motivation for me, I wanted to challenge myself. You were familiar what I was doing at the airport. And I got to a point where I was just tired of, you know, being behind computers and training all these new hires and not really having any input at the end of the day. I was just really, I felt like a computer zombie.
Yeah.
And I wanted a challenge. And I have a brother here who owned a landscape business, and he was always looking for kind of some specialty work that he could never find. And it had to do with lighting and irrigation. So I just decided I wanted to pursue starting my own business and running my own stuff.
That's awesome. Do you have any experience with that before moving down?
Honestly, not with irrigation and lighting. It was always a passion, but nothing that I had physical experience with. I kind of learned it all in the first year of really just putting my head to it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And when did you move down? What year was it?
Oh, man. I think it was 2018.
Okay. So I moved to Texas the first time for work here in Laredo in 2017, the summer of 2017. But then I went back to Anchorage for school. And then probably April of 2018, my now wife and I, we were just dating at the time, we moved down. We drove down.
Yeah.
Did you do the drive?
So my brother flew up to drive down with me, but when we did it, it was January.
That's awful.
It was 61 hours, 4,100 miles. Just the most beautiful stuff I've ever seen. Just the landscapes. But it was so cold, Lakota. It was unreal how cold it was.
I've been on the Alcan in like a December, January time with my parents.
What was the coldest you felt there?
Dude, I was young, so I'm trying to remember. I think it was -20.
Okay.
When we got up into Toke and then into like whatever that beaver town is into Canada.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it was like negatives for pretty much the entire drive.
Yeah.
And then of course, once you get into wherever you enter the United States, like, especially if it's in the Midwest, it just like, for some reason gets colder. You're like, this doesn't make any fucking sense. Right. Like, why is Wyoming colder than fucking Yukon?
Yep.
And It's miserable. Yeah, my wife and I drove down in April. So we had a little bit of snow, almost like relatively no snow driving from Anchorage to Tok. And we got some flurries once we pulled into Tok. But then as soon as we entered the next day, once we entered into Canada, snowed. Mm-hmm. And it snowed almost the entire time. And then we get down to Calgary, broke down crossing over into Great Falls, Montana.
And you took the same route.
Yep.
Exactly.
It's a popular route, especially since we were going to the same place. So I'm assuming you drove like through Montana, through Wyoming, through Colorado, mm-hmm. Hit a little bit of New Mexico, crossed over.
Straight through Amarillo all the way down to Texas.
Yep. So we took the same route. So we just kept going further. So you stopped in Round Rock. We just kept going south 35.
I think we hit past Tok. And we got into Yukon through Alberta and everything, and we averaged negative 35.
I believe it.
And I think the coldest we got was negative 48.
Damn.
And it was, I remember there was my whole windshield, like 3 to 4 inches around the perimeter. And I was driving a nice car. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't an issue with the car, but it was so cold that it was just frozen solid all the way around. The defroster on, I didn't shut my car off for the first 4 days and 3 or 4 days until we got to Calgary.
You can't.
Yeah.
Like you can't.
No.
Did you have a block heater in the car?
No.
Yeah. So no, you definitely can't.
Yeah. You cannot.
For all our Texas listeners.
Yeah.
a block heater.
Who can't even fathom that type of cold.
No. It's a mechanism that sits basically like in your undercarriage, like right underneath everything, underneath your engine and everything.
Yeah, usually plug the oil pan, I believe. Yeah.
And you plug it in and it just heats everything up so that when you go to start your car, it actually starts. Alaskans know how it feels when you go out and it's like 10 degrees outside and your engine is frozen.
I feel like we had a motto like plug at 20 or something.
Yeah.
Like
I don't know that. I feel like there was, because wasn't the city giving away those like free timers, like the free outlet timers that you could put on your extension cord to plug into your car?
Just you're anywhere in Alaska, or, you know, all the colder areas, and it's just your vehicles are always on. Every vehicle around you is just constantly running.
Yeah, and I finally wised up and got an auto start. Mm-hmm. And my little Spectra, you remember my little Kia?
Oh yeah, bum, bum, bum. Of course I do.
Uh-huh. And best invention ever until I lost heating one winter. And I was like, oh, it doesn't really matter if I start my car or not because it's going to be cold regardless. So
I had a little trade-off with mine. I think I had a Mazda CX-9. I put the auto start in. It was great. But the four-wheel mm-hmm. drive went out, so I think I was doing pretty well. So I went over and my brother had bought a Mercedes, different brother. And I went over and bought one as well. But the one that I found had heated seats, heated steering wheel, everything, but it didn't have an auto start and it was upsetting. But
yeah, you gotta put those suckers in though.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So my Volkswagen right now has auto or heated seats mm-hmm. and black leather. And I'm like, who in the fuck?
100% in Laredo, Texas.
In Laredo, Texas, bought a Volkswagen because it was like, it must have been owned by an old person because it's a 2015. It's like the Wolfsburg edition. So it's like the nice luxurious line. Mm-hmm. And it only had 30,000 miles on it. Like almost exactly. It had like 29,999, something like that. And I'm like, nobody drove this. Like, this was like someone's weekend car.
And you know, they had a ton of winter tires when it got 30 degrees.
Yeah. And you're like, well, and it rarely ever gets that here in Laredo.
Exactly.
Like rarely. So, but I lucked out because they were trying to get rid of that car. Like, no one's going to buy this car.
I look at mine now and I just think it's just so unnecessary with all the, it was a great cold weather car. I mean, I showed up in Blizzak tires and I felt like I was on ice skates because of how soft they were on the hot pavement.
Right.
It was wild. I was like trying to take turns and like I felt like the car was sliding sideways. It's like being back on ice.
Yeah. And most people aren't gonna, they're not even gonna know what you're gonna talk about, like mm-hmm. the Blizz Tax and everything. Those are like prime tires on ice.
Yeah, so the Blizzak DMV2 studless tires. I'm not kidding. We were doing probably 80 or 90 through Canada on those. Uh-huh. And it was basically ice roads. For the Texas listeners, anyone in warm climates, there's a certain point when it gets so cold that it's actually more traction when you're on ice. It's a very weird concept to kind of think about. But
well, it gets so cold, it's like cement.
Yeah.
It's like concrete. It's there's no difference between that and the pavement.
Until a caribou herd runs out in front of you and you spin out.
Yeah. Or bison. Happened. Did you see bison out there?
So this is a weird story. We saw bison and they're just in the middle of the road. Like that was a little joke to us when he first came up, you know, what if we get stopped by bison? You know,
you always will. Always will.
But there was this one bison and he was off to the left of the road and he was in the middle of the field and every other bison we saw, I'm not kidding, looked like it like a blizzard just ran through it. They were covered in frost, but this one bison just stoic, not moving, completely crystal clean, just standing there in the middle of a field. And it was just a really interesting moment looking at that guy and just wondering, like, do other bison come and lick this guy clean every day? Like, how does this work? Why is he like
that? That's the leader. Yeah, that's the leader right there.
It's got to be, you know?
Every time that I've either ridden as a passenger through the Alcan or when we drove through it, I always saw bison on the road in the Yukon. Mm-hmm. And it makes me believe because they've been walking the same path for thousands of years, right? Well, not the same bison, but ancestrally they've been walking the same path. I wouldn't be surprised if we're just like, oh, they're walking that way. Let's just build a road.
Right?
Let's just build the road, make it easier on them, make it easier on us.
Right through the mountain passes.
It's gorgeous.
Did you happen to hit a Pink Mountain?
You
would have drove through it, but it would. Yeah, so there was a place called Pink Mountain. And we hit it at sunrise. And we figured out why it was called that. The entire mountain just, it was white and then it was completely pink. And just the takeaways from that trip are just the kind of, I mean, a lot of people won't put up with that cold, but that kind of beauty is, it's still worth it to this day, thinking back, you know?
It's unmatched. The Yukon has nothing but beauty up there. That's it. I mean, literally, that's all the Yukon has to offer.
Mm-hmm.
It's just gorgeous landscapes and really nice people. Unfortunately, a lot of people will never experience that or will be able to handle it. Like my wife did not like the cold. She grew up in Laredo, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not her thing. And every time we had to stop, if it was for gas or anything, like I'm a gentleman, I'm going to get out, I'm going to pump up.
Yep.
And she'd be laughing at me as I'm freezing. She goes, aren't you like used to this? I'm like, there's a certain threshold that any person that grows up in a cold climate can handle.
Yeah, when your glove sticks to a gas handle.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, there's only so much that you can take. We literally, when we were going through Great Falls, Montana, there was almost no snow. And then we get into Wyoming and we hit a blizzard, like a whiteout blizzard. And I'm used to driving in it. So I slow down a little bit. And my wife's like, the speed limit's 65, like go 65. Like, can you see past 12 inches? I can't. Right? Like, that's usually just a good rule of thumb. Just slow down. And if something is coming towards you.
That's for sure.
Oh, it's terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying. And our truck, so I bought an F-150 from a fraternity brother.
Mm-hmm.
And he was moving to New York. So he's like, I don't need a truck. I don't need a car. And I'm like, yeah, bet. I'll buy it. So I sold the Kia and then bought his car cash or his truck cash. And he never took care of the truck. I'm like, damn
it.
Yeah. And then it got worse because I left it for probably a month and a half, maybe 2 months. While April and I were traveling for work and for the holidays. So it just sat in Alaska's winter for 2 months without being started or anything. So that made it worse. When we get back, I had to swap out the battery and everything. And then the spark plugs like were busted. That was the big deal. That's what caused us to break down in Great Falls.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. So how are you liking Round Rock? I've been out there. I think it's absolutely gorgeous. I love that area.
It was really hot today. It was nice hot, in the 90s. It was 107 a couple days ago, but it's honestly not a bad heat. I mean, 90 degrees in New York, it feels a lot worse than it does here, you know?
Yeah.
That dry heat, humid heat, that whole shebang. But I like Round Rock. There's a ton to do. It's just really flat. That's something I'm not used to. You know, there's hill country and everything, you know, I understand, but it's just Alaska's different. You know, you can't compare the two, you know, beyond the climate and everything. It's just kind of, it feels bigger, you know.
I cannot stress this enough. I have tried to explain that concept to so many people down here.
I know Texas is a big state, but Alaska just feels big. You feel so small when you're in there.
Well, Alaska is three times the size of Texas.
Exactly,
there's something about the mountains and the adventure is limitless.
Mm-hmm. I think the concept of the animals too, because I go out in the woods here and it's rattlesnakes and spiders or scorpions. It's not grizzly bears and timberwolves.
That's true, or moose.
Yeah,
moose will stomp the shit out of you.
Oh, unless you play Wu-Tang Clan, but that's another story.
I'm going to have to hear that story.
Oh, yeah. If you put a pin in that one, let me know.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Round Rock's like perfectly placed because you're right by Austin, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, I'm more northern towards Georgetown. So it's a real nice area because Georgetown's big. You know, Austin's huge. And I look at the spec. I want to say, don't quote me on this, but probably quote me on this. Between 1.2 and 1.6 million people in just Austin, I believe. It might be a little less. I'm not 100% on that, but I know that Alaska's.
I know it's over a million.
Yeah, Alaska's million. Total population is 746,000, roughly.
Right.
So it's that concept, like just thinking about that, the amount of people that are just in this one city, and that's one city in Texas versus, you know, three times that in an entire state. So there's a lot of
four times that,
you know what I mean? Yeah. There's so much, you know, opportunity for work as long as you're willing to put the work in, you know, that's why I like this place a lot, just because I can keep grinding.
Yep. I lived in Dallas for two summers and that was awesome. Awesome. And that's another big city where it's just the hustle and bustle 24/7, right? You have your grinders, you have your ballers, and then you just have like good old country folk on the outskirts.
Your redneck bougie like moi. Dude,
and Dallas is actually really interesting because it's not as progressive as Austin is.
Agreed.
Right, but it's getting there. Mm-hmm. But then you'll meet some like backwoods, like hick in the middle of nowhere, like, or not in the middle of nowhere, like in the middle of the city. You're like, what in the fuck are you doing here? Right. It's not the visualization that you have when you step into a metropolitan area. Right. And you just see some, I don't want to say white trash or anything, right? But like, you'll see some honky tonk. I did. But you'll see some like backwards ass thinking honky tonk, like just
the dead slinging, listening to some of the trucker. No offense, exactly. Y'all. I mean, they got some songs that are interesting, but
right. It's Dallas is one of those fascinating cities. I think all the cities I've been to all of them in Texas, all the major ones, and most of the little ones too, but Texas is very interesting because you will get different cultures in different locations. Like Laredo is the least diverse city in the United States. It is primarily Mexican here. Yeah. And you know it as soon as you get here. You're like, I'm basically in Mexico, right? And where I work, I'm delivering pizzas right now at Domino's while I'm going through the Border Patrol process. And where I work right now, I could throw a rock into Mexico.
That's wild.
Oh, it's crazy. The river's right there. And you have Border Patrol agents driving up and down ATVs, riding horses. They have their big SUVs going on dirt roads. It's bizarre.
I think that interesting. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
I'm saying, I think the interesting thing about Austin really is it feels like a very transitional city for a lot of people, you know? There's a lot of people who come to Austin looking for, you know, their big break or whatever, or just trying to get into new things. But you find so many people that aren't from Austin. And that's you know, it's a place where people just like to go to kind of transition through life and try something new or do something else or just really try to give it a shot. And I think Dallas is really heading towards that as well. A lot of people are trying to make moves there as well.
Well, Dallas is expanding massively. But Austin is Silicon Ranch.
So yeah,
a lot of tech companies are starting there. They have one of the biggest app startups, or most amount of app startups, I think, are in Austin right now.
Some microdosing think tanks.
Yeah. I mean, seriously. You got Tim Ferriss that lives in Austin. Mm-hmm. You have Joe Rogan's. He co-owns a gym on it there in Austin. He's thinking of moving to Austin, which I'm pretty sure he's going to once his Spotify deal is solid. Mm-hmm. Once that starts in 2022 or 2021, I think he's moving to Austin. I had a buddy from Vivint that I met, he moved out of Salt Lake City area to Austin to start his meditation app. And that blew up, did really well. And he's like, I'm just going to start traveling. And it's it really is. Austin is a really nice, like you said, a transitional spot where it's you can take off from here.
Yeah.
That city can really make people. And you're seeing it for yourself. I mean, from the little conversations that you and I have had, you're doing pretty well with your business.
See, there's a lot of money here and there's a lot of people who want the dream, you know, the people who are settling down that I'm doing jobs for, they all want their piece of the pie, and, you know, businesses like mine, we can go in and give them that.
Yeah.
You know,
that's awesome.
That, you know, just sick. Do you see yourself settling in Texas, living there for everything? Not necessarily Laredo, but.
Yeah, so for probably the next 5 to 10 years, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I see myself moving up maybe to the Northwest eventually, or maybe the Northeast. There's a part of me that does miss the snow. And there's a huge chunk of me that misses the mountains. I miss being able to drive 20 minutes and going into a mountain, turning my phone off. And leaving everything behind and just hiking for several hours. There's something super spiritual about that, super meditative about just getting away from the hustle and bustle of things. And that's what Anchorage really offers.
Yeah, I think it was Rainbow Lake. There was a kind of a remote trail halfway past Parsons Flats. Or not Parsons Flats. What was those? You know, when you're going down south out of Anchorage and you come up to the... all the flats. Yeah. And then you keep going and
yeah,
right on the left there, there's this trail that just goes up the mountain and into this remote lake. And just being able to do that, I completely agree. It's really, it's soothing. It kind of puts you in perspective and it's just a good place to get on your own for a sec. Hopefully with some bear spray.
Yeah. Or a nice 10 mil.
Yeah. 10 mil's nice. We run a 454 Casull. So, but
yeah. But speaking of guns, so, what was it? It must have happened just a couple weeks ago. My wife and I were watching a movie, and we were in the house alone, and we heard one of the doors shut. And we're like, "What the fuck was that? Nobody's here." And so I go downstairs. We don't have anything. I don't have a gun, and I do the perimeter around the house, inside, outside, and I'm like, "There's nothing." Turns out that it was just air pressure that closed one of the doors.
Yeah, I was going to say the draft, especially with the central air. We get that all the time here, and it's interesting. Uh-huh. I never dealt with that before. And then, you open the back door and the front door slams shut.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, because it's pressurized, so it's mm-hmm. it's all going to interact. But I was like, oh, I didn't know that. And my wife immediately, her first thought, she'd never been a gun person, never shot a gun. She goes, "We need to get a gun." I'm like, I'm down. But well, I
shoot one.
Yeah, like let me go teach you. You know, yeah, I'm that's very my familiar. Thing.
I don't have no problem with people wanting to own weapons. I just think that they should start with a weapon that they're comfortable with and build from there. You know, buying a 45 ACP yep. for someone who's never shot a gun is not too, you know, not too smart in my book.
No, we're gonna,
if you train,
we're going to start her out at a 9mm.
Okay.
We're going to start her out in a smaller caliber, something that should be comfortable. There's actually there's a gun club here.
Might want to start her on a 380.
That's not bad. Actually, I started on a 380 myself.
Yeah, 380s, you know, it's got a little less recoil. It just depends. The 9mm, if you're going with like a steel frame or a polymer, it's going to make a big difference on recoil and, you know, shot ability.
That's true. So I know Monday we're going to go in and they offer free lessons.
Oh, wow. So you're pulling the trigger, so to speak, huh?
Yeah. I mean, at least getting her comfortable. I told her, you know, we'll shop around, but I need her to be comfortable with the gun so that in the event that she needs to use it, she doesn't shoot her fucking foot off.
For sure.
Right. Or like, you know, I grew up going to NRA safety gun camps and, shooting a whole bunch of different guns. I grew up shooting guns with my mom. And then before I moved to Texas, I would take my mom's guns to the range. And my buddy Bryce and I would just go and shoot for hours, mm-hmm. like every weekend. And so I'm very comfortable. I look forward to getting her as comfortable where it's like, okay, like you see, a gun's not a scary thing. It's a tool. Mm-hmm. It's a tool. It's how you use it. If you properly if you mishandle it, yeah, you're going to fuck something up. You're going to fuck yourself up or you're going to hurt someone else.
It's not a toy and it is designed to kill. I mean, that's the reality of it.
It's very true.
It's very you know, true. It's a sense of security, which is interesting. You know.
Yeah. Speaking of killing, when's the last time you went on a hunt?
Oh, a hunt was with my dad, my brothers, and a friend for Sandhill Crane in West Texas.
Okay.
That was pretty fun. My dad really wanted to try Sandhill Crane, the ribeye of the sky, so that's where we went, and it was a great trip. I mean, I wish the accommodations were a little better. We went with these guys called Roe Outfitters out there, and you know they were good. The first guy we had was a little inexperienced. But you know they put us on a bunch of ducks and stuff. I guess as I get older and more, I think more about like I don't want to hunt things that I'm not gonna eat. I don't want to put things on the wall. I've never been into that. If I'm going to hunt, it's going to be something that we're going to either feed myself or my family or my immediate friends with. You know, I'm not selling meat. I'm not doing anything like that. The last thing I want to do is put a rack on a wall. I just never had any interest in that.
I never did either. And I never really understood it. Mm-hmm. And I get it. Like it's a trophy, right? But it's like, okay, but that's very similar to like our participation trophy.
Yeah.
You know, like you did it. I get it. You accomplished the hunt. You did it and all that. And there's some aspect of it that's like aesthetically pleasing, yeah. I guess. But to give you some background on me and trophies, when we were cleaning out the house to leave for Texas, my number one rule was if it doesn't fit in the truck, it's not coming.
Mm-hmm.
And great my entire rule to have, by the way. Yeah. Yeah, I was like, it's not coming. I'm not renting a trailer. I'm not doing anything. I'm not paying someone to move it. Like, we got rid of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it, like, I had a collection of books that was upwards of 1,300. And I had read a good chunk, probably about 60% of those books. And I had to get rid of most of them. And I donated them to the Covenant House. Mm-hmm. So I, like, single-handedly gave them hundreds
of library
of books. Yeah. I gave them a library and I gave them some of my guitars and everything and anything that like I knew that I wasn't going to use.
Right. Guitars?
I had three guitars. I gave them two of them. I still have my classical guitar.
Oh yeah, that's right. Still running nylons and everything.
Yeah, I fucking hate like anything beyond nylon just because it fucks up my fingers and I don't play enough to callus them. Yeah. So, yeah, I like the nylon. And I like the nylon sound when I'm playing classical.
It's warm, you know?
It is. And I have to preface the listeners, I'm fucking horrible at the guitar. I do not practice enough at all. I can play notes. I can play little diddles. I can like, you know, jam out a little bit, but if you're like, you know, play this, make her, you know, if you make any requests, I'd be like, get your phone out. You got Apple Music or Spotify. You can play it on there. Cause I ain't going to play it.
Yeah. I got to a point that I can look up the chords and, you know, I'll rough it, but I'm trying to work to a point where I can just listen to it and play it. And that's really fun to do.
That's good. You've always been really talented at the guitar. I remember anytime we'd hang out outside of work, you'd diddle, and I loved it.
Yeah, I think we had a couple gatherings where we had some jam sessions. That's for sure.
At least one or two. I think it was mainly just Backstreet Boys.
Oh yeah. Oh God, I forgot about that. Oh man. Should we?
Yeah, because it's a funny ass story.
All right. So Lakota came over to my house and I think my girl at the time, she was away, and we were hanging out as a bunch of guys from work, and you know, we were drinking. And when I say drinking, we weren't, you know, having a couple of beers. We were just being stupid and just pounding shots, you know. So we got to a point, we got this one friend, Ben, and Ben's a firecracker for sure. I don't know what happened, but Ben was just, what did he say? Hit me or something? And like Backstreet Boys is playing in the background, which is fantastic. But you can take over from here because I'd love to hear your side.
Well, oh no. So, I mean, I was pretty gone at this point. This is one of like maybe a handful of times in my life where I just got blackout drunk. Wow. Where I'm like, oh, I don't remember. But Ben explained it to me the day after because we all worked together. And he goes, yeah, dude. So, you got pretty hammered. I'm like, I apologize, for any of my actions.
Anything that I don't know what happened.
Yeah. And how he explained it is, I was coming up to him. I was like, Ben, tell me you love me. He goes, no, dude, you're drunk. Go sit down. I go, Ben, tell me you love me. He goes, Lakota, stop. I'm like, Ben, we're pals. Okay. We've been working together for several years. Okay. You love me. Like, we're homies. And he just wasn't having it. And then all of a sudden, I just swing back and slap him as hard as I could.
Oh, that's right.
Like, open hand. So that's what started that. And like I walloped him.
Yeah, you did. So I remember the sound.
I remember that. And and you guys hopped up and were like, whoa.
Everything all right? Yeah. And I think what you said something like, hey, it's all right, man. Just hit me. Just give me your best shot. We'll be even. And you literally stood there with your jaw out. And Ben's like, all right, buddy, are you sure? And Backstreet Boys, you are my fire, is playing in the background.
Right.
I don't know why, but who cares at this point? And then, yeah, he cocks back and the sound, it was like a slab of brisket hitting a floor. Just a thud.
Yeah. You know?
And then I remember like, oh, he's going to be knocked out. And I remember you just look back and you go, what, that's it? I'm good. You just like,
oh, dude. No, he hit me. So, he hit me, and then I took a step back, and then I swung back and threw another slap, open hand slap to his face. So before he punched me. So let's make that very clear.
I thought he was gonna for sure.
Oh yeah.
But it wasn't like he didn't slip it in. Like he took a couple practice hits, and like he just put his fist, and then he just wallop. Like, it was definitely not staged, but also not free form at all. It was completely planned.
No. Yeah. And I in my mind, even when he was practicing his punches, I'm like, he's going to slap me because right? I slapped him. He didn't fucking touch me. And I'm like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever fucking done.
God, I wish I've never done video.
Anything like that.
No, I don't know who you've become or who you were before I knew you, but I don't see you doing anything like that. You know?
No, oh, never, because I'm such a
pacifist. Like, honestly, you've always been a pacifist.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Like, I'm just gonna slap the love, shit out of this guy.
Yep. I don't know what that was about, but I'm glad Ben and I haven't talked to Ben since I left Pegasus.
He's doing great.
But we're still on good terms.
Yeah, I talked to him a couple of days ago. He's working the slope, and he's got a great gig up there. He just drives in circles with a big truck.
Looking for polar bears?
No, I think he's just, they're building roads. Yeah, it's pretty interesting up there. He's just got a good gig. I think he makes like $580 a day or something.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so he's doing good.
Good for him. Pegasus, how's Pegasus doing?
I have no idea and don't care. I'm sorry.
Dude, that place, do you know why I quit?
Because it turned into Swissport.
No, I wasn't there when it was Swissport.
No, I mean, it just...
Anyways. Like culture, I have no idea. I don't know how Swissport was
so much
as a culture.
Just,
no, dude.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, Vera was the manager over at the cargo side, mm-hmm. right? But I was taking over a lot more responsibilities. And I'm like, that's fine. Like, I'm fine with that. But pay me more, mm-hmm. right? Like, fuck you, pay me kind of thing. And I think it was Linda or Lisa Close, whoever the director was. Yeah, I was like, I sat down in her office. I'm like, hey, can we chat? She goes, yeah. I go, hey, I love this job. I love the people I work with. But I'm beginning to notice that there are more and more responsibilities stacked on me. And I feel like I'm not being compensated for my time here and my work. Right. I was super calm, professional. And she goes, okay, we'll look into that. And then 2 weeks later, they give Vera a fucking raise, a $2 raise. And I get nothing. And I'm like, okay, bye.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you?
It was a slap to my face after working for that company for almost 3 years. I think it was like two and a half years, something like that. I was like, all right, like I'm done. I'll go work a less paying job over at the library and, or not the library, at the bookstore, I think is what I went and did at UAA. Mm-hmm. So I could be on campus more. And yeah, I never looked back. And I still keep in contact with some people there. I mean, you include, you and I were beyond Pegasus, but it was sad leaving.
It was. When it was good, it was great. You know, we had a crew of people who, you know, when cargo would count on ramp and ramp would count on cargo and vice versa. And, when the training was solid and I don't know, from what I remember, we used to get along swimmingly. And we had a lot of hard days that we got through that just felt really, you know, accomplished at the end. It was definitely a good growing period.
Some of those night shifts, dude, were fucking horrendous.
Like 20,000 pounds of freight per flight with 189 passengers on and off and just three people to do that for 6 weeks.
Exactly.
Running from gate to gate. Like, it was wild. It was wild.
Literally, when we say running, literally foot to pavement, hauling ass.
Yeah. through the bag well, through the bag well with like five strings of cart, like a string of five carts, just like trying to park while a plane's coming in and like three people are bringing in. Those three people are the only people who are going to work that whole flight. It was just wild, man. But we got it done, crazy, you know? Dude. We got it done.
Every time. Every
look back on that time and what kind of stood out the most is, you know, I did a lot of the training. Like that was my main thing. That was a training manager.
That's how you and I met, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. And I met your other buddy too. That was funny. Anyway.
Which one? Bryce?
It might be Bryce. All right. Skinny guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Be Bryce. He showed me some. Anyways, what I was going to say is that I did a lot of the training, so I had to fly out to all these hubs and stuff, right? And I would just get this up. What I realized then is just the level of responsibility that they put on us, it was non-existent in any other station. Like being 18, 19, 20, 21 years old, pushing back airplanes, being even 25, pushing back airplanes that are multi-million dollar aircraft in circles or dragging, you know, me and Ben, he's in a 747 and he's talking to the tower while I push back and he's brake riding. Like that kind of level yeah. of responsibility is just not found bizarre. In any other station. No, I had 30-year maintenance personnel.
Probably for good reason.
Yeah, 30-year maintenance personnel telling me they didn't want to do something because they weren't comfortable. And I'm like, I'll do it. You know, and you don't. Yeah. Even, I look back at it now, like I'd probably be terrified if I went back and tried to do some of the stuff we used to do.
Well, and I try and explain that to people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Especially like, you know, right now I work with like teenagers, right, that are like finishing high school, like going to college. It's not a sexy job, right? I deliver pizzas. But,
you know,
I try and explain to them, like put into perspective, like I've had a lot of responsibilities in my life. And like that job was like probably besides being an educator on base, that was probably the one that had the most to lose. Like, your fuck up could be a big fuck up, like millions of dollars of fuck up or like hundreds of people's lives at risk. Yeah. And I'm like, and you guys work at a pizzeria. Like anytime it gets stressed, like it gets busy, I'm like, you guys take a breather. It's a fucking pizzeria.
Was that you who came up to me at the gate when I was closing out the flight and were like, hey, I just wanted to let you know, so-and-so is loading bags in the backpack. Is he supposed to be doing that?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
And you're like, no.
What? All right. So for those of you who don't know, in the aircraft bins, they have these little nets that separate the different areas. Weight and balance is extremely important. So we set these flights up. We tell, hey, we need this many bags here, this many here, all that stuff. The closeout, we kind of finalize all those numbers, send it to the captain. The captain inputs that data and it generates all of his information that he needs to fly the flight correctly. Well, this one guy, Lakota, comes upstairs and he goes, hey, this guy, I'm just going to say Preston. This guy, Preston, is just loading bags in the fucking bin. And I'm like, what do you mean he's doing that? He's like, yeah, he put like 30 bags in there. And we're probably 3 to 4 minutes till actual like break, release, departure.
Push off. Yeah, like, exactly. Like,
and we had, this flight was solid. So he tells me that and I run downstairs and I look and sure schnitzel, he did. Like, that's what he did. And I asked him, like, why would you do that? And he goes, well, there's more room in there. Zero concept of weight and balance and the fact that there's more room in there because there has to be. Like, I think Lakota hopped in with me and we restacked all of that in literally a minute and a half. I think it was like 35 or 40 bags in a minute and a half. Shut the doors, closed the net, shut the doors, pulled the equipment back and had it on time still. And it was just... It was so much stress, man. There's so much stress in that job.
And that was only one moment.
That was just like, one flight,
Of like, you know, what we would handle 6 to 7 flights on any given night.
Yeah.
Depending on if we were getting an Omni flight or Sun Country was coming in or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was crazy. And then on top of the cargo flights too, like the Eva Airs and all that. It was a fun job though. I mean, it was stressful, but I think the best part was, is that, there were guys like you, and Ben and Mike and stuff like that. We're just like, we're getting shit done.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to get this done. Right.
Motivators. You got it. That kind of job, you have to have motivators in charge. And if you don't, no one's going to get anything done.
It's true, man. Cause anytime, I remember you guys put me on, like, I don't even know if it was an official position, but a safety check inside the cabin. So my job was to supervise the cleaning and do a full security check inside the cabin. And so make sure nothing was tampered with, make sure everything's in its place, yada, yada, yada.
And that's about as much as you can say, just so you know.
Yeah,
even to
exactly.
this day. Like even to this day, yeah.
I know, just being as vague as possible, but yeah. The main thing too was just making sure that the cleaning crew was getting their job done efficiently. Like, we need to go. Like, we have 8 minutes to do everything that I need to do and then get this entire plane ready for new passengers.
It's after like, we took all of them off. And all exactly. their stuff. You know? We look on it now, it's like if my bag's delayed or something, like I don't get fired up about it. I'm like, oh, somebody.
I don't either.
It's just you get a respect for those workers, and not all of them are good, but you know, a lot of them, you know, we busted our ass, man. We really did. We did things that just are mind blowing, and it never comes back to us, you know, because once you do that, it's expected.
Exactly. So it was a thankless job.
Yeah,
and that's why like. Yeah, and I'm the same way. When I'm at an airport and like things are taking a while, like you'll see people at the belt like getting antsy, and I'm like, you guys, like, chill.
I'm at the point where I can hear a pilot, and he'll be like, oh, ladies and gentlemen, and as soon as he says like the tone, I'll know that you know we're gonna have at least a 20-minute delay for whatever reason. Right. And it's ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. Apologize to inform you, but it seems that our maintenance personnel have left out an important check. So they're going to go ahead and check the blue line systems of hydraulics, and we should be up and running shortly. And you've got like 50 people around you who think this is a big deal. And I'm like, nah, they just literally didn't email the check sheet. That's it.
Yeah, that's it. I remember I was delayed sitting in the cabin for about an hour before we took off. And I think I was by myself because I think I was flying from DFW to Salt Lake City. And I was totally fine. I'm like, that's why I brought my portable charger. I brought
downloaded some videos. I
had everything download. Yeah, it's like this actually gave me more time to download more.
Did you ever do pushback?
We're good. No, so that was one thing I was super intimidated to do.
Yeah, it's wild. It's still ingrained in my mind that whole pre-departure communication with the pilot. Like I verbatim still remember, and I will never forget it.
Like, you did it
every thousands day. Of times. Like, I'm gonna do it right now because it's great. It was like pre-departure check is complete. All bin doors and service ways are cleared and secure. Engine inlet verification is complete. Standing by for brake release. And then, like, you'd get those pilots where they'd come in. There's this one guy, U.S. Airways back when it was U.S. before American. He'd come in and like Journey would be playing when he plugged in the headset. Like, don't stop believing. And you'd be like, this guy is my hero because it's been a rough night. It's, you know, 10:59. We have 32 minutes to turn this flight that's supposed to take 40. And, you know, I plug in and Don't Stop Believing's playing. Like, this guy's my hero right now. And he would come outside and he's this one guy, Captain Mike. Oh my God. Lakota, he comes outside and he's like, how you doing, Tom? How's it been? I'm like, I'm doing great. He's like, me? Not so much. You know, I bought a snow machine and my wife's cheating on me with some young guy. So I'm going to go have some fun. I was like, what?
Oh my God.
Yeah. I was like, all right, do you need a drink? Like, do you want to go for drinks after? Like, what are you getting at here, bud?
Do you need a pal right now?
Yeah, I'll be your pal. Do you need a pal? I would be it. He was a badass pilot, man. I had so much fun just every time that guy came. His stories were just great. But that's awesome. You look back on those times and you're like, man, we did that, you know?
Well, and I'm always grateful for those times because it was a lot of hard work. For the most part, it was a great crew. And man, we just like, I remember damn near every night leaving work. So just to let people know, we worked the night shift. We worked graveyard. Mm-hmm. So what, we'd show up at like 5.
And it was like 5 to like usually between 2 and 5 a.m. depending on, you know, Omnis or whatever else was coming in.
Exactly. So if we had special flights, we had to stay after. But, you know, most of the time it was like 2 or 3 in the morning, which is still a decent shift, especially when you have stuff to do during the day.
You have no life. Like no life unless you don't want to sleep.
Yeah.
And you had
And to. I only worked ramp during the summers. So I did it for 2 summers. And then
I always look forward to when you got back. Like, what's up, sexy? Calling on the radio, Lakota copy.
It was fun, dude. It was one of those summer gigs that I like looked forward to.
Yeah, real.
And it was just because it was impossible for me to do if I was going to be at school. So I was a full time student at University of Alaska Anchorage during.
Yeah, you were putting in work, man, left, right, and center. That's for sure.
Oh, I'm still trying to. Mm-hmm. I dropped out of school.
Yeah.
I don't know if I told you that.
I don't think you did.
I dropped out my senior year. Yeah.
Why'd you do that?
I was pursuing Vivint. So.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Do you mind if I ask what happened with that?
COVID happened with
Vivint. Oh, God.
COVID. So,
I'm sorry.
What, 3 months? You know, it was time for me to go.
Yeah.
It was time for me to, like, I stepped away. So it wasn't like, I mean, I tell, like, anytime, I don't know, there's probably customers that are going to listen to this, but whatever, fuck it. Here's the truth. If they text me, like, a customer I set up 2 years ago, a year ago, whatever, they'll be like, hey, like, how's it going? Hey, can you help us with this? I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. I lost my job due to COVID. It's like, I kind of did, but I kind of stepped away, right?
Did you just kind of get to a point where you thought maybe, you know, I want to pursue, I got this time I'm spending and I need to spend it somewhere else?
Well, it was that. And also, I had learned what I could with Vivint,
mm-hmm.
and I had plateaued and became complacent.
That's a terrible, terrible just, feeling.
It really is. And it's just it's such a hard decision because you're like, man, I don't want to quit because it's a great opportunity, but I'm not putting in the work to have that great opportunity. So it's like, okay, like, dude, I was half-assing my job and still putting in 80 or 90 accounts in 4 months,
mm-hmm.
which for door-to-door people, they get that. They're like, oh, so he's like, potential, I could be selling 160, 200, which is well over the six-figure mark for 4.5 months of work.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wasn't. Like, I'd sit around all the time. It's hard taking rejection. And I'd sit around until probably like 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, get out, knock, sell something. Mm-hmm. And then sit in my car, wait to go pick up guys. Like, that's... it was miserable. And I was a manager. So there was a lot more expected out of me, you know, managing my guys and selling more. So I got to the point, dude, where COVID happened and had the worst week of selling. I had my regional manager come down from Salt Lake and then with a team, and we were knocking in Laredo. So he got an Airbnb and I was meeting with them every day. And then we go hit the doors. Well, I think it was like Thursday night or Friday night, we were put in shelter in place in Laredo. I think in the entire state of Texas that day.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that. So I'm out knocking and it happened at like 5:30, which is now prime time for door-to-door guys to make sales because everybody's home. And I'm getting my teeth rocked. Just... doors slammed in my face. People don't want to talk to me. People are being super, you know, they're scared, right? We don't know what this is.
This is pre-mask.
At that time.
Is this pre-mask or post-mask?
This is pre-mask.
Oh, yeah.
I think. Yeah, yeah. It's pre-mask. So, yeah. So people are freaking out. They're all scared. And I hadn't sold anything that week. Like maybe I think I sold one account and an upgrade, which is horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I put in that many hours any week, any other week, that would have been 6 or 7 accounts. That would have been, you know, a few thousand dollars
mm-hmm.
that I would have made in just that week. And dude, just got my teeth fucking rocked. And that was like the cherry on top. Then COVID hit and we couldn't knock doors. So they put us on like cold calling. And I'm like, I don't want to do this.
Dead, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to call. I don't want to, but like, I don't mind bugging people at their door, right? Because it's very hard for them just to ignore me because I'm annoying. But I'm from Alaska and I still have my Alaskan phone number. They're not answering the phone. They're not answering the fucking phone. They're like, who the hell? Even now when I'm like trying to call a delivery, I'm like, hey, like, you know, it's Domino's. I have to call like 4 times. Because they'll let it ring twice and then ignore. Let it ring twice and ignore. Even when it's at midnight. It's like there's no telemarketer calling you at midnight. I promise you. Right? It's like, just pick up. Just pick up. So, yeah, I told my boss, I'm like, dude, I think I'm done. I'm done. I want to take everything that I've learned from Vivint and put it into my businesses and the podcast and pursue something rewarding and a little bit more stable, you know, instead of working 100% commission. Sure.
I mean, well, I was stable and I couldn't take the monotony and just the not being in charge on the lines anymore. That was the weird part. Sorry about that.
Right. No, you're good. So for years, I never really made smart financial decisions. So I've never really had financial stability. So then you throw in a commission only job and it's like, yeah, one week I may make $2,300. Right. And then the next week I make $100. And then the next week I make $200. And then the next week I make $1,000. And then I don't sell for months.
So you're just,
and I go back to
it, and between it was just, flush and scraping there, and flush and scraping. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's like, fuck this. You know, I mean, of course I could work harder and I could have applied myself more there. It's not the job. It was me, right? I wasn't taking advantage of the opportunity, but there's only so much you can do when you're just beating yourself. No, that first summer I fucking killed it. I only worked like 3.5 months and I sold 80 something accounts. Like I was killing it. I was one of the top rookies and I was flying high. And then sophomore year, I was just like, nah. Junior year, even worse. So yeah. So now I'm pursuing Border Patrol, just looking for something that's going to be challenging and rewarding. You know, I live in a city that's impacted by illegal immigration and drug smuggling, and I mean, you see what it does to a city. Just come down to Laredo, see what it is. It's like most of them aren't criminals.
I'm going to visit you here shortly.
It's still like,
if you're still around,
you need to.
I will.
You need to. Well, if I get in, everything's slowed down, so I still have a few more things in the process, but if I get in, I'll be in Laredo for the next several years.
Okay.
Because this will be my duty station, hopefully. So, and I need to come up to you too, because I haven't been able to get out and see Austin.
We'll have some fun. We'll grab some scooters. Like, can we even grab scooters? Or are those all gone now too? Probably.
I don't know. We don't even have them down here.
Just
having
drinks, go bar to bar, and just grabbing a scooter. I mean, as silly as that sounds, it's a freaking blast. Like, you get like four people and you're just goosing down the street. And just, you park it outside a bar, you hop
mobbing
in, some shots. And it's just, it's a good time. It really is. But that's not all there is.
That's what we're doing. Mm-hmm. No. I know Austin has a lot to offer. I've driven through it 30 times. I've just never got out and like seen it. We did that in DC. So my wife and I and my little brother and his girlfriend, we were in DC over the holidays. We did. We hopped on like the limes and stuff.
When were you in DC?
I think you were gonna be there a week after for a concert.
Yeah, I was there for New Year's.
Or something like that.
Rock band, and yeah, that's I was gonna laugh if we overlap there. We talked about that. You're right. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we were texting, and I was trying to set it up, but I think by the time New Year's hit, we were on our way to Branson, Missouri. Missed each other. What the fuck did we do? Okay, so the holidays last year started Laredo to Nashville, I think.
We did that Nashville, too. Tennessee. I love Nashville, man. I love old Nashville.
More. Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah, Nashville's pretty cool. I have buddies out there. And so we drove to Nashville, stayed at her aunt and uncle's for the night, and then got on a plane at 5 in the morning. And flew to Pennsylvania, where my parents live. My parents live in New Oxford, Pennsylvania. And we stayed there for about a week. It was like 6 days. And got to see a lot. Went to Gettysburg. Went to my old stomping grounds in Frederick, Maryland. And then we went to D.C. And that's where we rode the scooters all around, saw most of the monuments. We didn't get to see the Jefferson one. That's not, I don't know why, but the Jefferson one is my favorite. It is literally my favorite monument.
I didn't even know that weed was legal in D.C. How silly is that?
Yeah, it is.
I had no idea. Yeah. Like, there's no way it's legal here. We have, you know, our politicians and everyone to meet here. We have the White House. There's no way. And yeah.
Well, how are the politicians? How are the politicians going to smoke weed if it's not legal there, right? They're all stoners. Come on. They have some cracky ass on both sides. Mm-hmm. Anyways, we don't got to get into that shit because that's a shit show right now.
But, I do have one topic I wanted to bring up and ask you if you've heard of.
Oh, do it. Let's do
have
it.
Have you heard of the Norwegian amateur diving sport known as death diving?
As death diving?
Yeah.
No. What is it?
Give that a Google search sometime. Oh, God. I don't know how this... You ever heard of Aussie Man Reviews?
No.
He's this Australian guy, and he does reviews of, like, internet videos. And, oh, God, if you ever wanted to zone out, it's just hilarious. But he starts featuring this death diving. And the whole sport, there's a classic and a freestyle. And you go off a 10-meter platform, like a diving platform, into the water. And you basically, like, jump like you're dying, like you're dead. And you either do, like, flips or you just lay out. And right before you hit the water, you suck yourself in the fetal position. And that's the whole concept. Yeah. So I just
watched. I'm actually watching it right now.
Oh, my God. What do you think?
I'm watching it right now. Dude, it's bizarre.
Isn't it?
That's such a weird thing. Yeah, and this is the championship.
Exactly, the fact that there's a championship right now, it's just, and I think a lot of the videos are from like 2019. I'm sure it's existed before, but that, I saw something like that, and I've seen some weird stuff, but that's actually something that looks kind of fun, because I grew up like doing jumping. You know, we'd go out in the woods and find a swimming hole and go jump off a, you know, a 50, 60, 70, sometimes 80 foot rock into the water. Hope for the best. You know, we were pretty dumb growing up with that stuff. That's for sure. But, oh, man.
I feel like kids have to be dumb.
Yeah.
Like, kids are dumb. Well, kids are dumb. Let's just say they're like slightly, I hate trying to be PC. They're just like slightly retarded adults.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's just like, you're not fully there yet. Like there's something just not, there's no hindsight. And all there's nothing or no foresight. There's no foresight at all.
Right. Yeah.
And
situational awareness.
I think that's why going back to something you were saying. Yeah. And going back to something you said was like, man, if I were to go back and like push back a plane, I think I'd be nervous too.
Yeah. I would be right now.
Or like going to do something that you wouldn't be comfortable with because it's like you have stability right now. You have things going for you.
Like we were fearless then.
We did. Well, you had to be.
Yeah.
I mean, they literally let.
Because you always wanted to impress, let,
like,
you know?
Young adult. Yeah. But they were like, what? The oldest person that was like running us, like actually running us, was maybe in their 30s.
Mid 30s at the most.
Right? Like, yeah. It's like, we had a lot of responsibility.
Yeah. I hate to keep coming back to that. Over but to it's something that, you know, it gets ingrained in you. It's something that changes the way your perception of just work in general and responsibility, like
mm-hmm.
you know, I respect the military completely, but it's totally different between the military and civilian running an airport. It's just so different.
Yeah, well, and I was like 19, 20 years old in charge of cargo.
Mm-hmm.
Cargo, right? Like if Vera wasn't there, I was running it.
Right? Shipments, dog, dangerous good, check, security, fish.
Hazmat,
crabs,
anything,
baby bears, yep. like shipping baby birds. Bears. Like, come on.
No, we had the Birdman. He'd come up every year. The Birdman, he's like famous in Las Vegas.
Why do I feel
he
like
he has
a real
all
person.
These exotic birds? Oh, and he's a real person.
Oh my god,
he's literally a real person. And he comes up every year for the Alaska State Fair, and he does like. In one of those pavilions at the state fair, he does like a bird show.
Just bird things.
And dude, we had a fucking pelican. A fucking pelican in the middle of this, that small ass warehouse. Dude, that pelican was like 4.5 feet tall.
That's wild.
That it was almost eye level with me, dude. I was like, what the fuck? And he's just standing because he's like, oh, do you mind if the bird stretches his legs? I'm like, is he going to fuck us up? Like he goes, no. Like, it's just been a long flight. Like, can he stretch his legs? I'm like, sure. Right. And this bird like steps out of this big ass kennel and stretches his legs and everything. I'm like, this is a fucking pelican. Like, you're not going to see a pelican like this in Alaska. Like, this is nuts. And being so close to it.
That's wild.
And man, he had a condor, an Andean condor.
Actual condor, huh?
Like, yes, dude. Like, and that was a giant ass bird, too, with like a. Oh, it's like 8 feet. Oh, and I think they can grow up to like 10 feet long. The Andean condor is like one of the largest condors. And they're like, I don't know. I'm like talking out my ass, but my listeners know that I'm full of shit. Let me see. Andean condor wingspan. Let's see. But it was a giant 10 foot. No, see, I'm not fucking
crushed
bro.
It.
I know my shit. I know my birds. I know my raptors. 10 foot wingspan up to 33 pounds. That is massive. And the bird that he had at least had an 8.5 foot wingspan. So when the wings like spread out, you're like, holy shit. Like this bird is huge. You know, we're used to seeing eagles, but like this is a massive bird.
It just,
it's nuts.
Yeah. You see something like a hummingbird and then just compare it to that. And it just blows your mind. How fast a hummingbird
looks like a little gnat.
Yeah.
Compared to that. Oh, yeah.
Just wild.
It's crazy. So, I know I knew this once upon a time, but are you originally from New York?
Negative. I'm actually from Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. Okay. I knew it was somewhere in like the New England area.
So I grew up in the Northeast, in Massachusetts, Western Mass specifically. So I was kind of used to having snow and everything. I mean, it wasn't anything like Alaska. I think when I was 17, when I went there, that's what really sealed the deal. So I had experience in the woods, you know, I grew up with hunting, fishing and all that, but that's what kind of sold it for me. And being in Texas, it was the weirdest like climate shift of my life for the first few months. Being, you know, 60, 70 degrees in winter was just unfathomable. It was nice, wasn't it? The first winter? It was so nice.
Yeah.
It wasn't nice having to save up money and get a damn, you know, summer tires in the middle of February. That was funny.
Yeah. Because, and also, like, especially if you're traveling down 35, like, you'll burn through tires so quickly if you're riding up and down highways, because Texans like to drive fast. I mean, there's a speed limit posted.
I mean, what? 130 appears 80 miles per hour, you know?
Exactly. Like, right? They're the same.
Where else do you find that? You know, I think like Nebraska is the only other time I had like 80 miles per hour, I want to say.
Right.
Maybe that's probably not true at all. But anyways, there was an area that when I first hit 80 mile per hour speed limit, I had to take a picture. I felt like, you know, that basic bitch just taking.
Well, because you won't. Yeah, you won't see it in Alaska. I think the fastest in Alaska was 60, 65 maybe.
Yeah.
Right, on the Glen Highway.
But here's the thing about that is that the back roads were like 55, right? All year.
Yeah.
That was something that was wild.
Yeah.
You know, the road could be gone with snow and you still 55. People are just doing like fishtailing around corners. That's just, I don't know.
With no fucks given.
Literally on a scale of 0 to 10, it was the latter. It was definitely 0. Just wild, man. I miss that place.
So the first time up in Alaska?
Yeah, I miss the vastness, you know, like we touched on earlier. That's the stuff I miss. I miss some people.
I do too.
A lot. But. So your family
doesn't live there at all? Up there. Well, Dylan still lives up there.
Okay.
My little brother. Yeah, he's still up there. He's doing really well. He's actually the COO of a development company. Out there in Kilgan Island,
okay,
is where they're developing, and they're restoring an old resort there that like Bill Gates has been, Steve Jobs, Paul Allen, like big Silicon Valley giants used to go there in like the 90s, like 80s and 90s during the dot-com boom. And then it shut down in like 2000 or so, like 2001, 2002. And my little brother's boss over at ASI, he still works there. He owns it. His mom was actually the owner of that resort, and she ran it. So they're restoring it right now, and he has his contractor's license, so he goes out and builds and helps restore. And they're actually looking at developing along the Kenai River for
that's the people dream are right out there
fishing.
Mm-hmm. Living there, just yep. I don't know. I don't think that's, you mentioned Kenai. That's probably, I'm sure there's other areas, but out of, as far as beauty was concerned, some area is the Kenai and that color of the water. That was kind of what, you know, what I beckons me when I think about Alaska. It's not so much the hiking trails.
Well, you can't
like
beat
that water, that just color, that glacial silt color.
You can't beat, exactly. You can't beat that like teal. Mm-hmm. There was like a clearest teal and you're like, man, it's just like, it's gorgeous.
Just slaying salmon. Water.
Yeah, it looks like a Gatorade. I could sip this up.
And I'm, you know, it's 5 p.m. in sunlight, and I'm lighting my shirt on fire to keep bears away that are trying to steal my fish. You know,
I've never had that experience. So and this is where you and I like differ, right? You grew up hunting and fishing and stuff like that. I didn't. I did grow up hiking and just getting out there. And so that's where I spent most of my time, was usually on a mountain. Mm-hmm. It was just, okay, driving to a random peak. Like there was one day I was at Pegasus. I was still working in cargo. And I hadn't been hiking in like 2 weeks. And it was like June. And I pointed to a mountain. I stepped out the front door on Old International Airport Way. And I looked at one of the mountain range right there behind Flat Top, or like kind of to the left of Flat Top.
Oh yeah.
And I just pointed. Ranch, I guess. I'm going to climb that mountain today. And I clocked out at 5, hauled ass to the other side of town because I lived in the east side at the time, mm-hmm. changed out of my clothes, grabbed a gallon of water at the gas station, and I Google searched the mountain range and found it and was up there in like less than an hour. And then started the trail. Nobody knew I was out there. Just started running. Like I literally ran for a good like hour of that hike.
That's wild.
And it was, I don't know if you've ever been out there. It's Wolverine Peak.
Never heard of it.
So the mountainside. Yeah, the mountainside. If you look to the left of Flat Top. Huh?
Was there still any snow pockets up there?
No. No, there was none when I went out there. It looks like a Wolverine carved into the mountain, like a giant, like 100-foot Wolverine carved into the mountain with its claws.
That's pretty cool.
And so it's like three peaks going up. And that's what stood out to me. I'm like, oh, I've never climbed that. So that's where I went. And it took me like 6 hours. And so by the time I was coming down, it was starting to get dark. Right,
because
like early June,
for you listeners.
It was late. Yeah, it was late June, so we were after solstice.
Yeah,
but yeah, for those I've never been to Alaska and experienced the midnight sun, the sun like during the summertime is like always there, just always in your fucking face. What you average 18-20 hours of sunlight a day for those 3 months, something like that. That's fucking crazy. So yeah, I'm coming down the mountain and it's like 11:30 and it's starting to get dark. I'm like, oh, I need a haul ass. Like, I've never been on this trail before. I got to get down the mountain. And so I just start running down and I ran into a bull moose to the right of me that started just like scruffing. Just like, I'm like, fuck you, dude. I have nothing on me. I have no gun, no spray. Nothing, just this gallon of water that's like almost gone. And this is good times. But I used to do shit like that all the time.
That's like the best segue and you could have said right there. Because that, you remember that Wu-Tang story I was talking about? Now I'll make it real quick.
Let's get to it.
That's the exact thing that happened. So we're on our way up and we're going, it's 7 miles in, 7 miles back. And we brought all this fish and stuff and it's straight up the mountain.
What mountain?
It's, I don't know the name of the mountain. I think it's McHugh Trailhead. Yeah, it was McHugh and it went out to but it wasn't the backside where you can drive in. It would just pull off and you go straight up the mountain. Well, we came up there, we saw some bear scat, whatever.
I've hiked that.
Yeah. So you know how it goes like straight up and around and then out to the Rainbow Lake there. Well, we had big dreams of fishing. Yeah. Well, we got all the way up there and like took a nap, woke up. We're like, man, we got to get back. We didn't do any fishing. We were just tired. So we're on our way back and there's this giant bull moose. And same thing, you know, we're talking like 60 plus. Which, for those who don't know, we're talking about antler spread. It's like 60 inches, 5 foot spread there. And this is a big boy, you know.
Huge.
He's just like looking at us and he's just doing the scruff and it's, you know, clawing with his hose and everything. And we're looking like, oh man, what do we do? We don't have anything either. And I go, John, you know, let's just make some noise. And I'm trying to make some noise, like rust some branches, get big and stuff. And all of a sudden I hear, Wu-Tang Clan ain't nothing to fuck with. And John's got his freaking and he's got his phone in the air. And this poor guy told this story for years. He was in the Coast Guard. He told this story to everyone in the Coast Guard. Nobody believed him. And I just like, I look at him like, I was there, man. I know you did it. But this bull moose, straight up, he looks at us and he goes, oh, fuck that. And he just takes off. That was it. Like, and was nothing to fuck with. And that moose understood. Like, he, you know, just, we ran down that mountain.
Hey.
That's what I loved about it.
It's because Wu-Tang is for the kids, not for the moose.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Well, yeah, that was.
That's fucking hilarious. Mm-hmm. You know, there's. I'm surprised you didn't run into a bear because I caught that you said that there was bear scat. So yeah, bear scat's poop, right?
Yes. So it's, the time of year that we were going, it was a lot of blueberry and like summer scat, but there was no fish in it and stuff. But the fish were in.
Yeah.
So you know that those bears are just heading down towards the inlets and stuff, just looking for fish.
Absolutely.
So they're not really worried about being up in the mountains as much. But, you know, there's still the – we saw one off in the distance, but you just kind of got to keep it in your eye. You know, it's not like wolves where you see one and you're worried about five behind you, you know.
And that's – so I'm trying to remember the trail that Bryce and I did because Bryce and I did a lot of hiking together. There was one hike – I think it was a little past, or maybe it was in Eagle River, but it was like on the backwoods. So instead of
Nature going Center?
Into Eagle, no, it was like past the Nature Center because this was a long hike and it was beautiful. I think it was Eagle Lake. I think it was Eagle Lake. You ever been out there?
I've been out both ways. So, I've been Glacier side and I've been on the Eagle River Nature Center side.
Yeah. So I can't remember which side we started on, but you know how you like, You're climbing a mountain and then you get into this like valley.
Yeah.
Right. Where you have like mountains on both sides and like a mountain range on both sides. And there's this beautiful valley and then the lake's at the end. And we hiked all the way up to it and it started getting dark. Just for all the listeners, I'd never planned any of my hikes. It was always, hey man, what are you doing? Nothing. What are you doing? Not shit. You want to hike? Fuck yeah, I do. And then we'd go.
Not right? the place you want to do that, but when you live there, if that's what it feels like you can do, you know, you kind of feel above it all, which is wild.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Just dumb kids just wanting to go out and explore because we're bored. And Alaska has just an endless amount of opportunities to do that. And by the way, if you're not from Alaska, don't do it because
ever,
there's some.
Ever do that. you plan again. No, because there's. I can't stress that enough.
Exactly, because there's
big
things.
Country.
and it is. And you can get lost and you can get fucked and you will get, like, wilderness will kill you.
Well,
like,
into the wild.
It's not the wolves. It'll be the cold.
Off of the road.
Yeah. Eagle Lake is, it's, fuck, what was it? Because I know it took us 8 hours to hike it. And we started earlier in the day. It was like noon or one by the time we got out there. But That was one of the few hikes that we actually started during the day. Mm-hmm. Most of the hikes were like after work, you know, hey, what do you got planned? Nothing. Let's go. Yep. And, but we're hiking back. It's a beautiful hike. Nobody's on the trail anymore. Like the last people were ahead of us when we were coming out and they were already coming back when we got there and we were just kind of hanging out. And, we turn around and all we heard in the distance, like halfway back, is howling. Mm-hmm. And if you hear howling, you're fucked. Like that's, you know, and it was close enough on the left peak where we're like, oh, they're not far. Mm-hmm. Like they're within a quarter mile of us, which is fucking terrifying. Like that's terrifying. Like,
these aren't coyotes.
Because we, you know? Yeah, no, they're not. They're wolves, and they usually hunt in at least 5 to 6, sometimes 20. Yeah, and they're giant dogs, and they will eat you alive. And so we're like, oh, fuck. So we're already shit tired because we've already been hiking for five and a half hours. We still have another, at our pace that we're walking at, another hour and a half, 2 hours, maybe 2.5 to go until we're back to the car. And we just start hauling ass because it's starting to get dark. We're hearing howling. And I think he had his 10 mil on him, but that's all we had. And it's like, that's only going to get you so far. And if it's dark, you're not going to see him because there is no light pollution out there.
And you're when never bringing dark, an extra magazine. There's like no one dark. Ever brings an extra magazine.
So, no, because you're like, you're, because you hope that you never have to
use JIC, it. Your JIC, right? Just in case, you know? Yeah,
exactly. And dude, we hauled ass. I don't think I've ever ran that hard on a trail in my life.
And you're already exhausted, so it's just because adrenaline.
Yeah, and you're like, by the next day, dude, my knees were shot to shit. My hips were from my hiking pack, where I had my snacks and water and everything.
Were you running like a frame pack or?
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had the fuck. I still have it. Bryce got it for me for one of my birthdays because I used to just hike with, like, you know, whatever the fuck I could find in my house. And he's like, dude, you need an actual, like, metal frame bag, like something that's going to, like, have support. And so he got me a really nice one. And dude, the scariest hike of my life. Most beautiful hike, too, but scariest. if you're not from there, don't do that. Like, there are things to look for, and one of the things is looking for bear scat.
Tons of black bear too, and some brown.
Well, it's because it's that valley area, and I think it actually crosses Crow Creek Pass, from Eagle River to Girdwood. So there's that trail, which was originally like a moose trail. Like it was an actual moose trail. And then humans were like, oh, we're going to hike that. And like, okay, well, if there's moose, that means there's going to be wolves and there's going to be bears. And in valleys is where you're going to find a lot of them just fucking hanging.
Yeah. Right?
Just chilling because they're looking to pounce on anything that comes into that valley. They stay on the mountain peaks.
And then they just scope.
Yep. Yep, and then they haul ass. So
and then they send an locator call to the people scoping or the wolves scoping on the other side, and they all meet up.
It's terrifying. So during that run, we heard howling coming from the right side and from behind us as well. So that's when we knew, like, we were probably about 30 minutes from the car when that happened, and we're like, we gotta book it, like. Now they're getting closer. There's more involved. Wolves are nothing to fuck with, dude. Mm-mm. But yeah, I can't stress it enough either. Like, I never planned any of my hikes, but I also, like, I grew up doing it and I knew what to look for. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there was times I was reckless with it. And there are people that lose their lives every year because they either get lost or they get, you know, they get hurt.
Yeah,
and
injuries back huge.
And they're alone. Mm-hmm.
You get injured out dude, there. Yeah.
Hey, you're fucked. Like, what are you gonna do? Crawl yourself out?
When I say injury, I'm not talking about a scrape. I'm talking about like slip in and your knee
break
blows
your
out.
Leg.
Yeah, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. You tear your ACL. You break your femur bone. Like, people fall off of cliffs all the time in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're climbing mountains, you know, you're reaching elevations well past 8,000, 10,000, 12,000 feet in elevation. Like, you're getting up there. Alaska's just, the mountains there are massive. That's why you mentioned hill country in Texas. Mm-hmm. I was in Bandera for a retreat with Vivint.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time I've ever like hung out in hill country. And I'm like, man, this area is pretty, but the mountains are nothing. That's why they're called hills.
Right.
Like, these are like little baby hill. And there's nothing. And like, you know, you talk to the Texans out there, they're like, no, man, these are pretty big. You ever been out there? I'm like, bro, let me tell you something.
On the real though?
These are
not. Yeah, they're not that big.
You know, so something you probably don't know, Tom, is actually, do you know where Burnett is?
Burnett County, Texas? Or the town? Are you talking about the city of Burnett?
Yeah.
I've heard of it, but I couldn't point it on a map without looking, so.
So it's actually
that was a weird
pretty
thing
close
to
you.
Couldn't point it out on a map without looking. Yeah, all right. Freaking map whisperer over here.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah,
makes perfect sense.
I've heard of it, though.
So there's a lake. It's not too far away from Georgetown. It's actually like, dude, it's like maybe an hour and a half northwest of you. But there's a lake called Lake Buchanan.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other side of that lake is a town called Tao, Texas. And my ancestors on my father's side settled Tao, Texas back in the 1850s.
That's wild. Have you ever been out
there? Yeah. And no, not yet. So I just found this out before the summer. I did the DNA. I did my ancestry kit. And some information kept coming back. And it was showing on the kind of like immigration background that there was immigrants in Texas. I'm like, oh, that's really interesting. And so I started looking it up and then I found Tao, Texas. And my I didn't find it. My stepmom did. My mom's wife
mm-hmm.
actually sent me. She goes, hey, you know, there's a town called Tao, Texas. I go, what the fuck? No, there's not.
There is
and
literally
we did the,
a name.
We looked
everywhere in Texas. There's Chad, there's every Tyler, everything. Anything you can think of, isn't it?
But Tao, right? Like my last name, T-O-W.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And I mean, it's not a very big place, but it used to be a saltworks company out there. And they were part of the Confederate Army during the Civil War. Which is interesting. Mm-hmm. Not savory, but interesting. Nonetheless, now it's just this like small podunk town on this beautiful lake, and there's a vineyard out there.
That's wild.
Yeah, it's called Fall Creek Vineyards, and I've been meaning to go out there with my wife and see if there's anything I can stake claim to. Like, hey, bitches, it's my namesake town. I'm the mayor now.
I don't know if that's how that works, but I'll support you fully if it is.
I think it's how it works.
I think that's how it works. Yeah, you're right.
I mean,
you're right. It's going to be how it works.
I mean, it's a population. Dude, like when I say small, it's like a population of like 1,400 people. Like it's a village.
That's
super small.
That's awesome.
And it's not far away from you. It's probably like 2.5 hours away from you.
You know, I'm going to go there now and send you a picture and meet all your family members that you don't even know about.
I know, right? Like Uncle Johnny and
Cousin
fucking
Phil.
Ted.
You know there's at least one Beatrice.
And that bitch Cassandra.
Freaking Deborah. Oh, man.
Dude,
well, this has been fun, man. This has been great.
Yeah. I've been wanting to get you on for a while, man. I know we're coming in about an hour and a half. Is there anything else you want to add?
I don't know. I mean, real proud of you. I'm happy that, you know, you kind of pursued what you want to do, and, you know, I wish you the best of luck. I'm grinding. I'm doing my best. You know, I've had some recent events going on that kind of tested my whole outlook and mindset in life. And, you know, I hope I come out on top, and I know I will. And I'm just glad and fortunate to have people like you in my life still. So thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, man. You know, I practice a philosophy of friendship, and I always try and keep the people that made the biggest impact in my life close to me. Mm-hmm. And the day we met in that training, that's when our friendship began, because you matched my goofiness.
And you got it. You know,
I remember.
Yeah, you get it.
Yeah.
You can sense that.
And I was so nervous going into that because, yeah. And I was so nervous, and I knew that, like, you were someone I wanted in my life for the long term. And the way that you push yourself and the way that you conducted yourself at work, where you, like, you didn't take yourself too serious, but then you knew when the serious moments needed to be dealt with.
It was Zella. And Zella always said, man, he goes, there's a time to grab ass and a time to do work. And it always stayed with us.
It's true, though. It's true. But there's a lot of people that don't find that balance. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people, even at fucking Domino's Pizzeria, right? Like, some people that I work with just take the job way too serious. It's like, look at the broader picture, right? Mm-hmm. We're a pizzeria. Like, have fun. Don't come to work and be miserable and try and bog everyone down, right?
Like, yeah, your energy there's is, a time you know, to just through everyone.
Is everything. And I've everywhere I go, I don't think I ever heard you say this, but it's what I observed in you when I was working alongside with you, and also, like, our, you know, the few times that we were actually able to hang out outside of work because of our fucking schedule. Mm-hmm. But every day at work, it seemed like your goal was to make one, like, every single person at work laugh or smile.
You have to.
And that kind of energy.
Because what we did was so hard.
That kind of energy is incredible. And we're working ridiculous hours. And that is literally my goal every day. Mm-hmm. And it has been for the past 2.5 years, 3 years. It was hard with door to door, just because someone's going to open the door and they're just going to be a grouch, mm-hmm. right? It's like, I can't make them laugh, right? But now, like, where I work with steady coworkers, I know who's coming in. My goal before I clock out is I make sure I interacted with each and every one of them and I made them laugh, right? Whether it was something goofy or I told a joke or whatever it was, because, you know, this, for some of these kids, it's the hardest job they've ever worked because it's their first job, mm-hmm. right? These are 16, 17, 18-year-olds I've never worked in their lives. And, like, those are the ones that come into work and they just take it so serious. And you're like, dude, like, relax. You're doing well, right? We're having fun. We're in the motion, right? And I have you to thank for that, because
I appreciate you.
I think before then, I think before then I took things a little bit too serious, and you brought a more positive energy to that, where it's like, look, like, you can take yourself serious, but there's a time to just, you know, tone it down, relax, right? Like,
I think it was always okay. If you looked at someone and you wanted basically to tell them that if I'm mad right now, there's a reason, so don't make me mad. And if we can get through mm-hmm. this night and everyone gets their work done, and, you know, we can have a little fun at the end of it. I mean, what else do you want at the end from a paycheck?
It's true.
You know? We got to get through this because we're in it together, and I got to be able to count on you. You got to be able to count on me. And that's really what it was all about for me, is just making people want to be there, because there's so many times we didn't, you know?
Well, because when I worked at Cargo, I know we keep going back to this. Sorry, guys, but it's like, this was like the grunt of our relationship, but it was like the most impactful part. Mm-hmm. And it, man, I worked, I don't know how you guys worked in the ramp every winter, because I worked Cargo during the winter and was still going to school. And I go out there and it's like fucking 10 degrees on the tarmac. we're all like on the belt loader and everything.
Not easy. Just, we're
freezing.
We're putting Herman Nelson freezing your fucking bag ass off to make like a hot chamber.
Yeah, dude. Because you're sitting out there, you're waiting for this plane to pull in. You're like, oh, I've been out here for 10 minutes. I'm already fucking cold. Like, you're just, like the wind's hitting you. Like,
it was hard. Anyways, man. Yeah, it was. It was hard, but
yeah,
it's cool.
It's crazy. Do you, I know you have socials and stuff like that, but do you want to shout out your business, like plug your business?
Yeah, for sure. So, I specialize in irrigation and landscape lighting. So if anybody in the area, Austin, Round Rock, you know, Travis, Williamson counties is interested, basically what we do is we come out, I'm a licensed irrigator, so I can handle new installs, commercial, residential, but we will come out and assess your home, get you working right. Or if you want to kind of transform your backyard, front yard into your own personal oasis, please do look me up. It's Hunter Outdoor Lighting and Irrigation. And my name is Thomas Paquette. So feel free to reach out. Our number is 512-945-4070. You can find us at hunteroutdoorlighting@gmail.com.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, hey, man, thank you. Thank you for being on this. I definitely am going to have you on again if you want.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime.
Yeah, this is fun. And we need to plan something.
I'll see you soon. So,
we need to get together. Oh, yeah. I know you will.
You take care.
We got to make it happen.
All right, brother.
We've been down in Texas for too long. All right, man. Peace. Thanks. All right, Contians, that's the end of the episode. I hope you all enjoyed. Please like and subscribe wherever you found this and turn on notifications so that you never miss a new episode each week. This episode was brought to you by PhilosApothecary.com. We have all dealt with stress, anxiety, and body aches from working out. Now is the time to try our Deeper Leaf Full Spectrum CBD oil. CBD is nature's anti-inflammatory and has been scientifically proven to help with overall general inflammation in the body. If you don't know, inflammation is what causes most, if not all, chronic health issues and soreness in the body. Our full spectrum CBD oil also packs a huge punch when it comes to combating daily stress and anxiety. Visit us at philosapothecary.com to pick up a bottle of CBD oil for yourself. Use promo code ICONTEVEN, all one word, at checkout to receive 15% off and free shipping on all U.S. orders. You can join me online on my website, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and yes, my YouTube channel. All links will be in the description. I hope you all have a wonderful rest of the week, and I will chat with y'all next time. Peace.